This podcast is supported by The Real Real.
People always stop and ask me, where'd you find that Gucci bag, that vintage dress, that outfit? And I'm like, The Real Real.
Meet Sarah. She's an expert pattern mixer, a Prada collector, and a big fan of The Real Real.
I think personal style is the ultimate self-expression, so it matters to me to find one-of-a-kind designer items or vintage pieces that fit my style. That's why I love shopping on The Real Real.
The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. And right now, you can get $25 off your first purchase when you visit TheRealReal.com.
I love the peace of mind I get knowing that everything is authentic. The best part about shopping on The RealReal? I can find the perfect dress, the perfect bag that makes me feel like me.
With up to 90% off retail, no one does resale like The RealReal. And right now, you can get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. That's TheRealReal.com.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed. No, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to another episode of the Every Outfit Pod. Chelsea, I would ask how you're doing, but I actually do know you're furious right now.
I am outraged. Guys, Bottega Veneta just released all of these new perfumes and these prices. $450? Go fuck yourself.
You asked me to guess what I thought an outrageously expensive perfume would be, and I said $300. I'm sorry, but Bottega Veneta is doing that bullshit where they're like, well, yes, it is $450, but you can refill it. And it's like, fuck off. No one does that.
I know. Like, I think it's good that it's a service that is offered, but I really need to know how many people are actually using those services. Like, a lot of Mugler's perfumes, I believe, are also refillable now.
But also, Chelsea, tell the people how much it costs to even refill it.
$320.
It's like, I'll just pay the $120 more to get a new bottle. Bottega, you know that's what we're going to do.
It's like, seriously not fair because the bottle looks so good. Like, this is the best looking new fragrance we've seen in a really long time. It's kind of in the Halston universe. It's a very organic bottle shape, but then it has this sort of curvy marble base and this like golden ring around the cap. It looks expensive as fuck. To be fair, it does look like it might cost $450. It is an art object.
Not to produce every element of our lives, but I do think the people would die for a Chelsea Fairless candle and perfume rating system. And I feel like if you started doing this, one, as I said, the people would love it. Two, you would start getting sent this as PR. A thought.
Not the worst thought, but then, like, I can't be fully honest about everything if I'm being gifted all the time. Like, it only takes one Bottega Veneta package for me to retract all of this.
By the way, when Chelsea says not the worst thought or worst idea, I feel like Kim Kardashian in that clip when she's talking about the first time she saw the house with Kanye in Calabasas, and he was like, I don't hate it. And she was like, you don't understand, guys. In Kanye speak, that meant that he loved it. And when Chelsea says, that's not the worst idea, that is her way of saying, I love it.
Yeah, that's a rave review.
So watch out, guys. Chelsea Fairless's candle and perfume unboxing coming soon.
Oh my God. Anyway, how are you? I haven't really seen you.
This is true. You went back to Humboldt for the weekend. I'm doing fine. I will say I have a gigantic cystic pimple on my forehead right now.
Oh, that's what that is.
You were just trying to be nice. You didn't want to say anything. I'm wearing a pimple patch over it. And every time I wear a pimple patch, I think of the Red Scare episode I listened to probably years ago, where they make fun of girls that wear the pimple patches outside in public.
Right.
And they're like, you're not fooling anyone. And even though I'm not in public, I'm in the comfort of my home, I have that feeling being in front of you wearing this pimple patch.
Don't feel bad. I, too, have worn a pimple patch. I get pimples quite rarely, but I did kind of recently. And I used a pimple patch, but it was one of those Supreme ones because that's just what I found. Like, Tat bought those Supreme pimple patches. And then I had friends come over and completely forgot that this shit was on my face. It says, like, sup and, like, fuck 'em and stuff like that. That is really not a good look for me. For someone else, sure. Not for me. I don't know about a pimple patch as a fashion statement.
No, I understand that that is the purpose of Starface, but not for me.
Like, I appreciate the fact that they're destigmatizing acne, but like, yeah, I'm too old for that shit.
Yeah, it's in a good spot where I would just wear a hat. I think this is a perfect opportunity to break out my fuck it hat, or fuck it.
Was that English?
To wear my fuck it hat, although... when we first started saying fuck it, everyone thought we were saying fuck it.
Or fuck head was the other one.
Oof. How was Humboldt?
It was great.
Did you make your flight?
I did. It was great. I saw my parents and my grandma and my godmother, Jill, who listens to the pod. Shout out to Jill.
And shout out to Wendy, who is a Richard Burton level patron.
Yes. And I spent a lot of time with my friend Claire, who's my best friend from childhood. We watched Practical Magic, and she reminded me that when we were kids, we had a two-person cinema club called the Silver Screen Sisters.
Aww.
And we watched movies together, and we reviewed them in this notebook that I know I still have somewhere, but I don't know where the fuck it is. And I remember we also used to, like, curate little film festivals, like, based around an actor, but it would be like Sandra Bullock or Matthew McConaughey or something, because I was a child in the 90s.
Love it.
So it was fun relaunching our club. But what about you? I feel like you also revisited your childhood in a sense.
Yes, I was about to say, speaking of reliving your childhood, I went and saw Megalopolis over the weekend. That wasn't me reliving my childhood, but there was about 30 minutes in between after the film ended and when I was having dinner. And so I went into the Century City American Girl store and I lost my mind in the best way possible. But have you ever had a moment where your spouse has looked at you differently? Not necessarily in a negative way, but just a version they've never seen of you before.
Well, there's no place more magical than the American Girl store.
Molly McIntyre was my first doll, and they have retired some of the historical dolls, but Molly is still there. It was like Christmas Day all over again. I was like, oh my God, her birthday outfit that I never was able to get when I was a child. Like, suddenly, this is something that I haven't touched since I was 12 years old, but I realized that, like, I have adult money now. And
yeah, you could buy it.
I could just buy these things. Like, I kept picking stuff up and turning to Paul and being like, I need this. This I do need to bring to your attention, Chelsea. When we were kids, Molly was the oldest of the historical dolls.
What do you mean? Her time period was the most recent.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they have updated it. We have 50s dolls, 60s dolls, 70s dolls, 80s dolls. And now, the newest set of historical dolls, Chelsea, are twins named Nikki and Isabel from the year 1999.
Oh, I'm gonna kill myself now. It's time.
Oh no, you're really gonna kill yourself, because for those who are unfamiliar with American Girl dolls, there are different props and setups, and one of them for Isabel and Nikki is their computer and desk set, which features, Chelsea, a 90s style computer with four screens to alternate that can play sounds with the press of a button. It also illuminates. Plus, it includes pretend CD and floppy disk drives, an attached keyboard, and a mouse that makes a clicking sound.
Okay, this actually does look like my childhood bedroom.
Of course, it looks like all of our childhood bedrooms. These characters are dressed like one of them watched Sabrina the Teenage Witch on TGIF, and the other one shopped from the Delia's catalog.
Yes, but the influence of Clueless is also factoring in to one of them. I think they did a good job with the looks, I have to say.
I mean, what is next? The 2004 historical American Girl doll?
I guess. See, the one that I like that's really major is the 1960s one.
Yes.
That dresses like Jackie O. She has the best wardrobe. She has her own recording studio. Like, she's the most major one. That's the one that I would buy now if I was a little girl.
Why are we putting such parameters? We have adult money. We could buy this now.
Yeah, good point. What's stopping us? Who fucking cares?
Nothing. Nothing stopping us. And guess what? We can get new American Girl dolls and then we can take them to the restaurant and dine with them.
Okay, and I can just fully turn into Betty Davis and whatever happened to Baby Jane at that point?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Oh, I also have to tell you about this. Because they've updated the decades, I forget if it's the 80s American Girl doll or the 90s one, one of them has a mini Molly McIntyre. So now they've made mini American Girl dolls that exist in the world of the other decades of the American Girl dolls.
I like the idea that the dolls just get smaller and smaller and smaller and it just goes on for infinity.
My mother kept all of my American Girl dolls, and so when we went home that night, I took them out of their Tupperware, of which my mother was like, I put it in a certain order. You're messing everything up.
You're like, bitch, these are my dolls.
I'm going to take them home. A few months ago, I sent you a photo from my childhood, which was a photo of me in a green floral dress holding a doll that looked exactly like me in a matching green floral dress. And I had to explain there was a catalog in the 90s that my mother came upon and ordered a doll that looked like me. And it's a very unsettling photo. For the Patreons, we'll put it in the episode description. I thought I had gotten rid of this doll. Chelsea, it was with all the American Girl dolls.
Well, watch out. It might be haunted now.
I think so.
Yeah, American Girl eventually introduced sort of customization, right? You could get a doll made to look like you. But when we were kids, that didn't exist yet. So I guess your mom had to get some bootleg American Girl doll shit.
I know they're eventually going to make American Girl movie, and my take on it would be like the Inception version, because now with the modern customizable dolls, they can get their own bitty babies, which are called itty bitty babies.
Wait, the babies have their own babies?
No, our dolls can have their own babies. Like, the baby dolls, the bitty babies are like the size that you would carry, but then they've made itty-bitty babies that work for your doll.
Okay, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about, but I'm sure that someone out there does.
This is about the time that Paul was like, we need to leave now. I'm afraid that if we don't, I will lose you forever. And he was correct. Speaking of presents to ourselves, to other people. Anyway, this is just me trying to transition to ask, did Tad get her birthday present?
The present that we all almost lost our lives trying to procure. Yes, she did, and she loved it. For Tad's birthday, I got her a pair of those Miu Miu New Balance sneakers, like the Mule, which was very hard to find. And there was a shipping delay, and they were going to be delivered to LA when I was going to be in New York. There was no way to remove the signature. So because of this, my friend Isabel and you had to take shifts at my house waiting for the UPS guy.
I think Isabel got the worst shift because she just waited there for 7 hours and it never arrived.
Yeah, and she had to be there at like 8 a.m.
And about an hour and a half into my shift, I was on the phone with you, actually, and it got delivered. I FaceTimed you. Everything was perfect. You were like, great, bring him to New York. What you didn't know at the time, and I guess I didn't realize, is the New Balance Miu Miu box itself was, guys, I took a photo, literally the size of an away carry-on.
Do you have like the world's smallest away carry-on though? Because you need to get the bigger carry-on. That's what it's called. It's literally called the bigger carry-on.
No, I understand that, Chelsea, but I wasn't willing.
I understand why you left it behind. I'm just saying, when I saw the box, it wasn't as enormous as I had anticipated based on your description.
I knew you were going to have this reaction because I literally, the night before we left, I was panicking. And Paul was like, what's the problem? I was like, Chelsea's going to give me so much shit if I don't bring this box. I got to take a photo next to the away. So
there's no shit. I'm just saying it wasn't that big. I understand why you didn't want to travel with it.
Okay. Is our little hype beast enjoying these shoes?
I fucking hope so. Also, last week I forgot to thank you for the incredible birthday present that you gave me. Lauren gave me one of those Olympia Letan book clutches. I've always wanted one of them. This one is made to look like a book called Marijuana Problems, which I Googled. Apparently it was some sort of book from the 40s. I assume some kind of like Reefer Madness-esque propaganda book. While I love it, I'm very, very offended that you think I have a marijuana problem, because I just want you to know that I can quit whenever I want.
Keep telling yourself that. Well, also, I got it from The Real Real because I wanted to combine two of Chelsea's loves, which are decorative clutches that I know you're never going to wear and will appear on your bookcase.
I'll carry it. Like once in a blue moon on a special occasion. But yes, it will live on the bookshelf.
And I thought you would be thrilled that I did not pay full price and I was able to hunt it down on The Real Real.
I'm very proud of you.
Which, as we've spoken about, is kind of your cardio at this point. Like, this is a sport for you, finding things on The Real Real.
Of course. But that was very thoughtful.
All right. Shall we get into some hot topics?
Sure. What are they again?
Lana Del Rey is a married woman. That's right. Lana Del Rey married alligator tour guide Jeremy Dufresne on September 26, 2024.
And she married him next to the very swamp where he does his alligator boat tours.
Right. People have thought, including us, that this was quite a whirlwind romance because they were first seen holding hands in London in August. But did you know, Chelsea, that they've actually known each other since 2019? Because on Lana Del Rey's Facebook page, she and her friends took a tour with Jeremy all the way back in 2019.
I did know this. But who knows when they actually started dating in this timeline?
Of course. But at least it's not like she met this man 2 months ago and now they're married. I mean, I know how you love a whirlwind romance.
True. I don't know. It still feels like it was a whirlwind romance, even though we don't know the exact timeline. And when that happens, I do think it's romantic. But I also think that, like, these people are probably just, like, having insane sex and being blinded by it and acting crazy and doing shit like getting married by a swamp.
Yes. I think those who are not so into this story, at the very least, know that this man keeps being referred to as an alligator tour guide. And that is because he is an airboat captain with Arthur's Airboat Tours in Louisiana. As a captain, he guides tourists through the swamps and marshes, offering an intimate experience with the local wildlife.
Good for him.
Do we think Lana stans are going to start booking tours?
I'm sure they already have. But she looked so pretty, didn't you think? I love that her something blue was a blue ribbon in her hair.
Yeah, she looked gorgeous. Not to be a negative Nelly, but I hope this is true love, but if she is doing this for the plot, then I'm also here for that.
Whatever happens, I support Lana and everything she does. And, you know, like she said on her last album, when you know, you know.
But also marrying an alligator tour guide, airboat captain, does sound like a Lana Del Rey album title.
Yeah, I hope we get songs about the swamp.
Another thing that happened, Frances Bean Cobain had a baby. Her, along with her husband, Riley Hawk, had a baby boy, Ronan Walker Cobain Hawk, which was born on September 17th. They posted this news on Instagram.
Do we know what the Walker is about? I don't know if we need the Walker. I think Cobain Hawk is perfect.
Unless that is Riley Hawk's mother's maiden name, then it's probably the middle name.
Yeah, I'm just so happy for Frances. I am very invested in her having like a happy, sane life.
Yeah, her and Billy Lord somehow, by the grace of God, turned into very normal people. No disrespect.
Yeah.
I see a lot of people remarking that this is the first grandchild of Kurt Cobain and Tony Hawk. Guys, this is also a child that makes Courtney Love a grandmother. Courtney Love was almost done with her memoir, and then this happened, and she's like, well, hold that manuscript. New chapter, new epilogue.
I don't even think it's that. She announced that she had finished that like 2 years ago now. We haven't gotten any updates. And this whole Frances Bean having a baby thing reminded me of the fact that she's no longer on Instagram, which is a huge tragedy because I just like being able to keep tabs on her. But I feel like she's been veering into grandmother territory anyway. You know, she's living in England. She's drinking a lot of tea.
I love this new era for her. Please come back to Instagram and tell us all about it. I assume you saw the Mudang SNL skit from this past weekend.
Of course I did. And I can't believe we haven't talked about Mudang just generally.
Okay, I'm going to reveal something. Mudang has been all over my feeds, but I'm not sure what the deal is. It's just a very cute, very tiny hippo?
Yes, it's a pygmy hippo that lives in Thailand in a zoo. Its name translates to bouncy pork. And Mudang has become famous for being like cute and fat and slippery and also very sassy. Like it's always biting the trainers, you know, stuff like that. But in a cute way.
Oh, of course.
I am really happy about Mudang's popularity because I was into pygmy hippos pre-Mudang. Like when you engage with a lot of bulldog content, the algorithm then starts giving you hippos, fat seals, pigs, which is why I've been off pork for over a year now. Like it's a whole thing.
So English bulldogs are a gateway drug, you're saying?
Yeah.
So for those who didn't see the sketch, Bowen Yang plays Mudang, and there's a riff on Mudang's popularity and how at one point Bowen, as Mudang, says, you know, leave me alone, I need to set some boundaries, which is obviously a reference to Chapel Roan's recent TikTok video that we talked about a few weeks ago. So I saw the backlash from Chapel Roan's fans before I saw the sketch itself. So I was like, wow, they must really go after her. And it's literally Bowen as Mudang being like, leave her alone.
It's so not mean-spirited. And it's so funny. Like, when I saw that, I felt seen in a weird way. Because I think Mudang and Chapel Roan and her fans have been kind of living rent-free in my head for the last couple of months.
Yes.
So it felt like the perfect synthesis of those things.
Well, people often speak about what is even the point or purpose of SNL, and I think you're right. This is a perfect example of why they are still valid, because these are two very chronically online things that we just exist with on our phones. So to see it reflected on a live show makes you realize, like, oh, okay, so other people are also seeing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, Mudang, Chapel Roan, they aren't really so different. They're both quite sassy. And they've both gotten extremely famous to the point of becoming household names in like 2 months, basically.
I saw a lot of reactions that were like, wow, wow, I can't wait for Chapel to cancel on SNL. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? She's not going to cancel being a musical guest on Saturday Night Live, certainly because of this.
I know. And if she does, that would be the absolute worst look, because it would look like she can't take a fucking joke. Which clearly is also the case with her fans.
It's not even a joke at her expense. Again, I kept seeing the backlash before I saw the sketch, so I was like, wow, this must be a really brutal dig.
Yeah.
And of course it isn't, because Bowen Yang is someone that took a break from his own podcast, Las Culturistas, last year for his own mental health. If anyone understands what Chapel's going through, it would be him.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found the attacks on him by her fans to be really gross, because people were instantly going to like, he's a misogynist. And I read some tweet that was like, this is a reminder that at the end of the day, a gay man is still a man. And it's like, okay, fuck off, you homophobic bitch, and get a sense of humor.
We'll have to see if Chapel Roan ends up on SNL.
I think she will, and I think she'll either end up with Bowen as Mudang or in a hippo suit herself, perhaps. And I think that would be a really good way for her to handle this.
Absolutely, it would show she had a sense of humor. Sometimes there are things that go on the internet that I just have to bring onto the podcast. One such thing is the Crumble controversy.
Okay, this is so niche, but I love that you're bringing this up.
We have a group text, Tat, you, me, and Paul. And so since Tatiana is in Australia and as TikTok obsessed as me, I was sure that she saw this Crumble cookie drama that was going down in Sydney. So for those who don't know, because you are correct, this is quite niche, there was a Crumble cookie pop-up in Sydney, Australia last weekend. It was advertised on social media accounts called Crumble Sydney. The cookies came at a hefty price, $17.50 for a single cookie, but fans lined up, and when they got their cookies, they were quite disappointed because the cookies tasted stale. They soon learned that that was because the cookies were flown in from the United States. And this pop-up was not affiliated with Crumble Cookie in any way, shape, or form. So the people who put this on, this pop-up on, either flew to Hawaii or Los Angeles, I've seen conflicting reports, and bought either 700 to 1,000 crumble cookies and brought them directly back to Australia.
I just don't understand how you transport 700 cookies.
They have since wiped their social media accounts, but you found a comment. They said that they paid a customs broker to legally bring these cookies into the country. They said that they spent $4,000 on travel, $6,000 on the cookies themselves, and properly imported them into the country. So their whole reasoning was like, this is not to make a buck. This was actually just to share the crumble experience with Australians.
Okay, this is really hard for me to wrap my head around, as I've never had a crumble cookie, so I just don't get, like, what is with these cookies?
Me either.
And they have stores here, right? Like, it's an LA thing. Like, didn't Kylie Jenner have a crumble cookie or something?
Or was that millions of milkshakes? It's so hard to remember.
I don't know.
I'm not here for, like, a 1,000-calorie cookie. That's my understanding of what these cookies are. And also, the other thing I've heard about crumble is mostly people being like, actually, these cookies are terrible. So that's why I've always been like, don't need to explore it any further.
Yeah, I'm also, like, loyal to Insomnia cookies. You know what we could do when we go on our Australian tour? We could import Hailey Bieber Erewhon smoothies.
Oh, damn.
Imagine how that would taste after 24 hours in transit.
No, Chell. Here's what we need to do. One of us needs to get a job at Erewhon. Learn how to make the Hailey Bieber smoothie. Steal a bunch of Erewhon smoothie containers. Go to Australia. Do our own Erewhon pop-up.
Oh, I think we just got a cease and desist from Erewhon in our email.
Damn, they're so fast. You want to open another drink? No, okay. Chelsea has an iced coffee, a Diet Coke, and a Pomplemousse LaCroix in front of her.
So sue me for wanting to be hydrated.
As she sips her Diet Coke.
Yeah, what else is happening?
Earlier this week, the first trailer for Nicole Kidman's erotic thriller Baby Girl debuted. The film follows Kidman as a high-powered executive who begins a passionate, quasi-dominant, submissive relationship with her intern, played by Harris Dickinson from Triangle of Sadness.
I don't know if it's quasi-dominant submissive. Like, this man is literally being like, bitch, drink this glass of milk.
It's like, what if 9.5 weeks took place at the workplace? That's what this movie is. We should say this movie is directed by Helena Ryan, who directed Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Sorry, I'm still thinking about the milk situation. I get that power dynamics are hot, but like, the second someone's like, drink a glass of whole milk as part of like some sort of SM role play, like, Nicole Kidman's probably gonna shit herself.
It's all fun and games until dairy's involved.
If that was me, I'd be like, this has to be oat milk. I'm sorry.
Yes, in our version of this film, we're like, wait. Is this oat milk? If not, do you have a lactaid for me?
Truly, that's like the most fucked up thing I've ever seen in my life.
Wait, Hot Harris Dickinson, where are you going? You've left the bar.
Okay, also, so Nicole Kidman in this movie is married to Antonio Banderas, who is like the hottest man alive, basically, as far as I'm concerned. But she wants to be domed by this dweeby teenager?
He's just got something to him.
I mean, he's probably not a teenager. He's probably like in his mid-20s or something.
Correct. But he knows how to control the dog with a cookie.
I don't know. He seems super annoying.
This movie also reminded me in a completely different way, but a little bit of Elle, the Isabelle Huppert, Paul Verhoeven film, of just a woman of a certain age being taken with an employee.
We should mention that Nicole Kidman did win Best Actress at the Venice Film Festival for this film. Isabelle Huppert was the jury president. And I watched her whole press conference, like, talking about this. And she was like, wow, Nicole Kidman really went there. And I was like, to hear that from you,
yeah,
means that she actually did really go there. So I'm very excited to see this movie for that reason.
And we will have to wait until Christmas because, yes, Chelsea, this movie is coming out at Christmas, which is a choice.
Wait, on Christmas Day?
Yeah.
What?
I see this as someone whose father made erotic thrillers. I just made an erotic thriller. I don't know if I would even go with my parents on Christmas Day to see Baby Girl.
No, that's crazy. Especially when it's like Valentine's Day, not that far away at that point.
Absolutely.
50 Shades of Grey used to always come out around Valentine's Day. they could replicate that marketing strategy with Baby Girl.
It's so crazy because the two movies, at least at this point that I'm aware, are coming out on Christmas is Baby Girl and then Robert Eggers Nosferatu.
Oh yeah, I want to see that.
I want to see both these movies, but like they are
not on Christmas.
These are not movies we could take our parents to.
No.
Unless we want to give them the worst present ever.
Wow, that's wild.
If you can't wait until Christmas for some new erotic thriller action, may I suggest my film, Sugar Baby, formerly known as Good Girl, which will be coming out on October 15th on whichever platform you enjoy renting movies from.
I love that for you. Thank you. Finally.
I know.
Congrats, bitch.
Thank you. I wrote this film with my friend Bri Esrig, who was a sugar baby. And I feel like this film encompasses me in a nutshell. It's darkly comedic, sexy, a little scary. You've seen it.
Yes, but I need to brush up before this Q&A that we're doing.
That is right, guys. We are doing an advanced screening next week here in Los Angeles, which Chelsea has graciously committed herself, or did I commit you, to do this Q&A after the film. And we will be releasing tickets soon. So if you are an LA fuckette who has next Thursday free, please come. Details to follow.
Yeah, I'll be asking Lauren lots of hot and spicy questions.
Or you're just going to ask me my thoughts about Baby Girl.
No.
You're going to do your best Isabelle Huppert talking about Baby Girl. I'm Nicole Kidman. You're Isabelle Huppert.
So there's a lot of Celesbian news this week. This is also a segment we might need a theme song for.
I was just thinking that.
But I'm going to kick this off with some really distressing news. Samantha Ronson and Cassandra Gray have broken up, have ended their engagement. Page Six reported this last week. This is a nightmare for the sober power lesbian community.
Also, the source quotes are vicious. I mean, they're not that bad, but like the subtext of them, because one source told Page Six, they finally broke up. They've had breakups before, but they finally broke up within the last few weeks. It's like, oh God. There's been discord between them for a long time. Like, this is brand new information.
I know. And I know that this speaks to my parasocial relationship, but I just really liked that they were together. You know, it made me really happy. It made me happy that Cassandra was able to find love again after losing her husband, and that Samantha was able to find happiness after surviving nightlife culture in the early 2000s.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say survived her relationship in the tabloids with Lindsay Lohan.
Well, that was part of it.
The other thing I learned from this Page Six story is that, one, Cassandra Gray had sold Violet Gray to Farfetch in 2022, but also she bought it back in September.
Although I didn't really notice any difference in the Farfetch era. I've said this before and I've said this again. I continue to be scared of Violet Grey. Like, I love it, but I'm literally scared to go in there.
In the store.
It intimidates me. I don't know the prices of anything. And I'm scared if I go and buy something, it's literally going to be like, you know, a Bottega Veneta fragrance.
The Violet Grey store, you truly feel like you're walking into someone's living room by accident.
Yeah.
And it is the epitome of, like, if you have to ask the price, you can't afford it.
Absolutely.
But you are curious. You're like, so this is a foundation I've never heard of before. So is it like $70 or $370?
Yeah, I feel like we should just go to the website and look at the prices and then go in the store.
But unfortunately, they don't have anything that we had picked out on the website. We're like, fuck.
Anyway, RIP to one of our greatest lesbian couples of the modern era. But where there is darkness, there is always light. We had a major lesbian wedding in Italy last weekend. Rebel Wilson married her girlfriend Ramona Agruma. You know I'm obsessed with this couple.
Thoughts on their matching high femme ball gown wedding dresses?
It's very them. They're a rare lesbian couple in that they're both extremely girly, and their gender presentation is like giving Disney princess. You know, I think they actually got engaged at the castle at Disneyland. So their dresses, which are different, they are different, but they look as similar as two dresses can be without literally being the same. And they both kind of look like white versions of what Belle wore in Beauty and the Beast.
Right. I mean, they were really showing restraint getting married in Sardinia and not Disneyland Paris. Although we don't know where they honeymooned.
We do not. But congratulations to our girls. No one is doing it like them, truly. There's always been the lesbian stereotype that lesbian couples slowly morph into the same person.
But they started as the same person.
They were pretty similar in the beginning, but they've gotten even more similar.
Here's to two becoming one.
In other Celesbian news,
when we do the Celesbian news theme, should the stinger at the end be Ellen saying, "Yep, I'm gay"?
Possibly.
This is all to say that we also watched Ellen DeGeneres' new special.
Yeah, what was it called again?
I'm Canceled? I don't know.
I wish it was called I'm Canceled. That would have been way funnier.
For Your Approval.
Right.
You can feel the sarcasm from your Netflix screen when you see it.
You tried to prepare me for the intro of this comedy special, but despite your best efforts, I was still completely and utterly shocked.
Every comedian wants to put their twist on, like, them getting to stage. Sometimes it's sketches, sometimes it's just them walking to stage.
Usually they're just on the stage.
Some comedians have been like, fuck that bullshit, I'm on stage to begin with. This, I said, Chelsea, it is so campy, I can't even explain it to you. So Ellen gets the knock on her dressing room door from someone. She begins walking to stage, and, you know, in many comedy theaters, they line the hallways with comedians who previously have performed there. But instead of seeing those comedians, it's every bad headline about her. Well, first it begins with, like, going back in time. As if you're watching this, you have no idea about Ellen DeGeneres' history.
Yeah.
It starts with her Carson appearance and takes you all the way to her getting canceled.
Yeah, and the part of the intro where they really, like, lean into the cancellation part, there's literally words that say, like, hypocrite that are, like, flying at her. She's, like, navigating through, like, a maze of, like, bad headlines about, like, a toxic work environment. Like, it is a strong, glamorous women having nervous breakdowns aesthetic, but also kind of like a commercial for antidepressants.
During her first cancellation after the Ellen DeGeneres show, where she was canceled for being gay, question mark, it's her climbing stairs, and on every stair are headlines about her coming out and being kicked out of Hollywood.
This was the best part of the special.
Yes.
Not to say that there aren't moments, but I feel like if there was an option for me to watch an edit of this that was just her talking about being canceled, like the canceled director's cut, I would watch that. Because that's interesting to me, but I don't need all of the material about parallel parking and like pigeons and the other PG shit that she is obsessed with.
I will say this, I'm a huge fan of the Here and Now special from 2003. I enjoyed her 2018 special, but this isn't funny, and I think you got at the heart as to why it's not funny, because it's trying to be two things. It's trying to be a normal Ellen DeGeneres special where she's commenting on the banality of life in a really unique way, which I'll say, this is not very unique. She does a whole bit about parking brakes and why we have emergency parking brakes, and it's like, so you don't slide down a hill when you park on one?
I know, she flat out says, I don't use a parking brake. It's like, have you ever been to San Francisco? You're a lesbian, what do you mean?
Or is it that you just don't park your car? You just go from your house where there is a car valet to literal valet.
I feel like sometimes, like, she's not even aware of how she sounds. Like, even the way she's talking about the seat warmers in her cars, it's like, I don't think a lot of people can relate to that. Like, most people don't have seat warmers in their cars.
Yeah, beyond being out of touch, there are long stretches of applause breaks reacting to nothing. When this special debuted, I saw a clip of this on Twitter, and I was like, oh, that's the joke. Someone edited her saying, like, I'm a strong woman, and then a minute of applause. No, that happens multiple times in the special. Like, early on, she says, let me catch you up on what I've been doing since you last saw me. And there was also nearly a minute applause break. And I'm like, are they sweetening the sound? Are these just such sycophantic Ellen fans?
Yeah, people really do fuck with her. And it's like, I get it. I have a level of reverence for Ellen, obviously, her coming out was historic. That happened when I was in eighth grade, you know, very meaningful to me. But also, I have never felt that her strong suit was stand-up comedy. The show worked so well for her, the talk show, because it's like she was able to do her Ellen shtick, do her jokes, interview people without having the pressure of a stand-up special where the expectation is that you're going to sort of give cutting-edge cultural commentary in some respect. And this was kind of her opportunity to do that because she has been canceled. Like, I get that she's not a very edgy person, so her stand-up isn't very edgy. She could have kind of gone there in this instance.
Right, and I will say, there is an edginess to the way she's talking about this stuff. Her way of discussing this cancellation via all these news reports of a toxic work environment on the Ellen DeGeneres show, which, by the way, if you've lived in Los Angeles, worked in the entertainment industry, this has been known for a decade. But whatever. Her response to that is, can't be mean and work in the entertainment industry, I guess. There's a minute applause break for that as well. And it's like, okay, so you are admitting that you're mean, right?
I know.
There's a lot of things that are said per the parking break, the seat warmer stuff that I don't know what to do with. Another one of those things is at one point she talks about how 16 people who worked on her show started out straight and by the end they became gay.
Isn't that like the fear that Republicans have?
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
about, like, gay people being teachers and, like, raising children and stuff.
That is her punchline. I'll put punchline in quotes, where she's like, people thought my show would turn you gay. Turns out you need a W-2 for that to happen. I just felt like that clip of Don Draper, where he screams, that's what the money is for. Where it's like, you don't need to do this. You have probably $500 million. You have 8 homes in Santa Barbara. Go and do that. Live with Portia.
I know. All you guys like want to do is like buy new houses and renovate them and live there for 2 years and then move out, renovate another house and sell the old house. Like, it's actually crazy. I have Ellen's decorating book, which is really wild. And it's basically just about how you need to put an Hermes throw blanket and a Basquiat in, like, every room in your house.
The amount of damage she has done to staging culture in luxury homes. But we're not ready to have that conversation, are we?
I'm not offended by the fact that she's not, like, taking accountability for her bad behavior or whatever. I just wish it was funny. You know, like, when I watch Margaret Cho's stand-up specials, I'm, like, hyperventilating into a paper bag.
Yeah, I also don't think enough time has gone by. She's clearly not self-aware about this situation at all. She only went off the air 2 years ago. This is a special that needs to come out in a few more years.
Well, clearly, it's impacted her immensely, as you know it would anyone that was canceled.
I will say the one humorous thing that I did find was she was talking about going to her therapist and trying to discuss how everybody hates her, and the therapist was like, but how do you know that's not just like self-talk? Like, where is this coming from? And she's like, well, New York Times, Entertainment Weekly, The New Yorker. That made me smile, because that must be rough.
Of course, and I do have empathy for her. This has clearly fucked her up immensely. Although I did like the disclosure that she's no longer doing Botox and filler. And might I just say, she looks fucking amazing.
I couldn't tell if she was being genuine about that.
I thought she was. I thought she was like, now that I'm like not doing this talk show, I'm just going to, you know, age normally. But,
well, I think the asterisk is like, and then I got a facelift.
Right. And I also have been eating vegan for like the last like 20 years, so I look hot as fuck.
If I can ask one thing from celebrity culture, can we stop talking about the chickens you have? If you are a celebrity with a chicken and you talk about this in your stand-up special, in interviews, I am not buying whatever product you're trying to sell. And it could have nothing to do with chickens. I'm not seeing your movie. I'm not buying your book. Enough with the chickens. Just buy eggs like a normal person. Go to a farmer's market even.
See, I grew up with chickens and that's where the eggs came from.
Yeah, but weren't you scared of the chickens?
No, I loved the chickens. And I named them all after supermodels, actually.
Of course you did.
Yeah, I had Naomi, Kate, Christy, Cindy, Claudia.
Your parents and you took care of the chickens. You didn't pay a chicken wrangler, which I'm sure all of these celebrities are doing.
Yeah, there was no chicken wrangler. That chicken wrangler was my father. Anywho, so you saw, what's that movie called?
I saw Megalopolis. I was one of 27 people this past weekend who saw the movie.
The fact that we're now expected to say Megalopolis and Femininomenon is really an appalling aspect of living in 2024.
You know that there's an interactive screening of Megalopolis, which I did not get to see because I needed to make a dinner reservation. The interactive screening of Megalopolis, Chelsea, is that there is a part of the film where Adam Driver is at a press conference and a man comes out in the theater and asks him a question that he answers.
Wait, a random person who works at the movie theater?
So this started at the Cannes screening where a man came out and asked Adam Driver, asked to the screen, Adam Driver a question as if he was part of the press corp that was asking him a question in this press conference.
Okay, I'm kind of into that. That's fully crazy.
That became part of the Megalopolis lore that this happens in the movie. But what I also learned is the few screenings that do participate in that, it's just a man lip-syncing what is said in the film. There is an audio track. So those of us that didn't have that kind of screening just heard the audio with no one there. I was really tempted to like go up to the screen.
Oh, I wish you had.
But the bummer is, it's like, oh, I want more of that. It's literally just a singular question where it's like, oh, I could go for like 5 minutes of this. People have taken to calling Megalopolis Megaflopolis. I think that is quite unfair. The film is exactly what I thought it was going to be, which is an 80-something-year-old great filmmaker who spent 40 years working on a singular movie.
Okay, that should be cut, though.
Yes, but the problem is, and what I mean by that is, I think at one point this film made sense, but kind of like overworked dough. He just worked on the ideas and the script for so long that it became nothing. So going into the movie, I understood the film is about the future of a city. And Adam Driver is this idealistic architect, and Giancarlo Esposito plays the mayor of New Rome, the city, who wants to keep everything by the books. The problem is, this is nowhere in the film. Literally, what you see as a viewer in this movie is that early on in the film, Adam Driver, part of the design authority, which I think you would like.
What, he's like the creative director of Megalopolis?
Yes, there is literally a part of the government that's like, this building's ugly, we need to tear it down.
Great. I would love that job.
Instead of that, what you see as an audience member is that he tears down affordable housing to make, by the end of the film, essentially Hudson Yards. It looks like Hudson Yards and his big innovation with his made-up material Megalon is that it's people movers that are slower than people movers.
Okay, I literally feel like you're not even speaking English right now.
I know.
Don't explain yourself further. I'm not going to figure it out. How is Chloe Fineman?
She's incredible. That part of the film is great. The best part of the film is Aubrey Plaza as Wow Platinum, who is a financial reporter who also wants to marry the richest man in the world, played by John Voight.
Ew, that combination. That's dark.
I hate to say it, Chelsea, but the other best part of the film is Shia LaBeouf.
Okay, whatever.
He basically becomes a Bernie bro and runs for office, but John Voight, Shia LaBeouf, and Aubrey Plaza are like the Gina Gershons of Showgirls, where it's like they know the movie they're in.
Okay, but what makes him Bernie-esque? Does he not want them to tear down the affordable housing to build Hudson Yards?
No, he just basically at one point is like, oh, the people, they have a voice. I should run for office and say that I speak for the people.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a corrupted version of Bernie Sanders. Also, Adam Driver, not that I need him to not come from wealth, but you learn he is the nephew of John Voight, the richest man in the world. So all I could think about in this film is these unfortunate people that live in Megalopolis who are forced to deal with the whims of all of these crazy rich people and an ineffective mayor played by Giancarlo Esposito, I just kept waiting for them to rise up and be like, fuck this Nepo baby. But that never happens.
Sorry, I'm still preoccupied with the idea of Aubrey Plaza and John Voight being a couple.
Yes, and the other line that went viral from the can screening, which is true, at one point, 80-something-year-old John Voight is like, look at my boner.
To Aubrey Plaza?
And Shia LaBeouf.
He could be Lana Del Rey's next husband.
That's true, there's still time. So anyway, I'm glad I saw it. You guys don't need to see it. It has less to do with any other film that Francis Ford Coppola has made and more to do with Joel Schumacher's Batman Forever. Favorite movie.
Speaking of favorite movies, we have finally seen The Substance.
That's right, guys. And as we correctly predicted, our favorite movie.
Inject The Substance into my veins. Like, literally the brat green substance. I ride so hard for this movie that I'm ready to give birth to Margaret Qualley through my back.
Ooh. I wonder, after watching this film, if apple martinis are just going to go off the charts. It is the color of the activator.
It's really the color of the moment. Pantone really fucked up when they did not call this as the color of the year.
It is a miracle this film exists. It's amazing to me that it has been received the way that it has, because this is a film normally that would be for us and 10 other people, but thanks to the buzz out of Cannes and the brilliant marketing that MUBI, the distributor, has done, it has led to a wider audience being exposed to this film, and I'm so thrilled.
Well, yes, it's very us and sort of niche in a sense, but also I have always thought that, like, women don't need more rom-coms. We need more movies that are inspired by All About Eve. That's what The Substance is. That's what Showgirls is. Black Swan, our favorite movies.
So for those who are unfamiliar, the film is about Elizabeth Sparkles, played by Demi Moore, who is an Academy Award-winning actress, question mark? Did not realize that till I started watching the film. Turned woman of a certain age TV fitness instructor who is let go on her 50th birthday and becomes aware of a black market drug called The Substance that creates a younger version of herself.
Yeah, I guess she's kind of like Jane Fonda if Jane Fonda's career had been torpedoed by the aerobics videos.
In this world, there's no Netflix to come save her with streaming television.
No, there's no Monster-in-Law on the horizon. There's no Grace and Frankie. It's over for you.
Another thing that makes this movie a miracle is who else could play this role but Demi Moore? Just because of her own narrative, the way that she has been looked at, the way that the media has metabolized her over the years, from Striptease to G.I. Jane to Charlie's Angels Full Throttle. And then also she's been quiet for the last 15 years. I mean, you know, margin call, hive, rise, but it's not autobiographical, but it is in many ways.
But also it's like she hasn't been around because no one's been casting her and shit. Like, I don't think that Demi Moore didn't want to work. I just think that the only roles for women over 50 go to Diane Keaton and Meryl Streep.
Well, and Nicole Kidman.
And Nicole Kidman. But like, there's not a ton of those girls, you know?
I also love that Demi Moore's character is 50 and Demi Moore is 60.
And might I just say, she looks really good for her age.
That's the other sort of fucked up, I would say, meta conversation I at least was having with myself seeing Demi Moore on a 50-foot screen of like, what has she had done?
Of course, we're so sick, you know, that we're even thinking about those things. And that's what this film is about, really.
So I'll ask you the question, would you take The Substance?
No. I don't know about the brand identity for The Substance. It feels a little outdated. It feels a little like DTC laundry pod brand.
The look of The Substance when you receive it in your box, it is giving evil Glossier.
Oh yeah, what's that other company? Athletic Greens. It's very Athletic Greens coated.
I wonder if Athletic Greens is going to start pivoting the color of their activator to a more bright green color. Another thing that I love about this movie is it is so clearly directed by a French woman, directed by Coralie Farget. As someone that grew up in Los Angeles, it took me halfway through the film to realize that this is clearly shot in France. The way that they used the south of France to mimic Venice or Santa Monica is genius.
Well, when you think about it, this film actually doesn't take place in very many locations. The world of the substance is very small, and at a certain point, you really do feel like you're trapped in this apartment with the characters. It is kind of like John Dielman vibes, and I think it's perfect because self-hatred, self-loathing, a very isolating experience that they visualized in this really special way.
As Margaret Qualley, who plays Sue, ascends, it sort of hastens Demi Moore's Elizabeth Sparkle's demise and downward spiral.
Casting could not be better with Margaret Qualley also. Margaret Qualley's a great actor and also just the most beautiful person to ever live.
Meta commentaries going on in my head. I immediately had to go to IMDb trivia and I was like, that has to be breast prosthetics, right? She cannot be that skinny and have that beautiful large breasts as well. And guess what? No, it was a breast prosthetics.
Oh, wow.
The best in the biz.
Yeah.
So the film has been spoken about heavily, about all the body horror elements, the goriness. But I will say the grossest thing in this movie to me is Dennis Quaid eating shrimp.
Yeah, I agree. That was grotesque. And like, people are bringing up Cronenberg a lot with regards to this film and Stanley Kubrick and stuff. But I also feel at times there's a strong Jonas Åkerlund aesthetic, and the shrimp eating kind of falls into that category.
There were also parts of the film that reminded me of the Smack My Bitch Up video.
Yeah, it looks more like a music video than a feature-length film because everything is so stylized and over the top.
Which, again, only a French woman could do. I love that a French woman is like, clearly in America they show women's breasts on network television, right? Can we discuss Demi Moore's iconic yellow coat in this film, featured prominently?
Kind of Dick Tracy adjacent.
That's why I love it so much.
Yeah, I think so. I just love how over the top it is and how campy it is from the get-go. The time-lapse sequence of Elizabeth Sparkle's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame is like one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. That and when she throws the snow globe into the portrait of herself, no notes.
Yes, it's following a great Hollywood tradition of an aging woman who has a gigantic portrait of her younger self.
Yeah, and the portrait ends up being defaced somehow.
Brilliant. It's so hard to talk about it without spoiling it. I really don't. I think it's such a special film. I think everyone should see it. But what is talked about, or at least I knew going in, that the last 30 minutes is what everyone says is like, okay, this is the craziest film I've ever seen. And I was like, huh, I've seen some pretty crazy stuff. What could it be? And you're like, oh, okay, we're going here. Like, I didn't realize that this film was going to have more in common with, like, Multiplicity at a Gwar concert than it does.
Yeah, it's over the top in every respect from the beginning, but by the end, it's completely insane. And not since seeing Angelica Houston's terrifying witch reveal in The Witches have I been this horrified by a woman's body. Watching the end of this movie, I literally felt the same way I felt when I was a kid watching that.
I'm curious to hear more men's reactions to this because I think Coralie Forget, in such a brilliant way, does weaponize as women our own self-hatred and the way that we dissect other women's bodies.
Yeah.
By just taking it to its nth degree.
Gay men will obviously love this movie. It's really campy. It's really glamorous. Straight men, the way that they are presented in this film, not super flattering. It's basically like whenever one of them does leave the apartment, they're immediately like harassed by like some scary guy.
Until they become invisible.
Yeah, it's very dark.
The darkest fairy tale ever. The original origins of most fairy tales are super fucked up in the way that this movie is fucked up.
Yeah, totally.
I'm so curious to see if this film is going to get nominations, particularly for Demi Moore. I could see it being submitted in the comedy category at the Golden Globes.
It will not be in the comedy category.
Look, Matt Damon won a Golden Globe for Best Comedic Actor for The Martian. It's what some people do to try to get a win.
No, I think it's automatically a drama when a beautiful actress like slowly transforms into like the scary person behind the diner in Mulholland Drive.
Right.
I think she'll get nominated for a Golden Globe at least for this.
I hope so. It is richly deserved.
Absolutely.
Look, The Substance will be living rent-free in my head for really years to come.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to like keep it on in the background while I do things around the house because it's so visually stunning, every single frame. I feel like I already need to go back.
Well, I can't wait for it to be playing in the background at this year's Christmas party. Maybe when the film comes out, we'll do a special spoiler-filled dissection of this movie. I mean, this clearly, I think, goes to the top of our pantheon of glamorous women having nervous breakdowns.
Yeah, it has all the key traits, like looking at yourself psychotically in a mirror while applying makeup. This actually was one of the most extreme scenes like that I've ever seen in a movie.
I think we've all been there, of just thinking that putting on more and more makeup will somehow make yourself feel better and build your confidence.
I mean, to be fair, I've literally never done that. I've never known how to do makeup enough to be able to achieve that sort of maximalist look.
I felt that very deeply, and probably have done that myself waiting for my date to arrive.
It's like, yeah, after a week being Margaret Qualley, how could you feel okay in your own skin?
Well, it's also especially hard if a poster of Margaret Qualley is somehow directly in front of your Hollywood Hills apartment.
I loved that apartment so much. It kind of reminded me of She-Devil in how extreme it was and all of the pink carpeting and whatnot.
I just love her vision of Los Angeles, a French woman's vision of LA. Give me more.
Yeah, can we get the Substance pop-up experience?
You look in a mirror and AI makes a younger version of yourself staring back.
Yeah, it's more like we just go and take selfies in the bathroom and stuff.
So major.
Anywho, my wife's coming back and I have to clean my entire house, so I should go.
I hope she brings back some crumble cookies from Sydney.
Oh God, anything but that.
All right, guys, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.